Okay, so my name is Tim Jones and I'm conducting this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust and the One Another Project in Trafalgar Square, London. It's the 6th of October 2009, the time's approximately 4:20 in the morning. Can you please tell us your name, your age and where you come from?
Okay, Trixie Blair, I'm 63 years old and I live in Watford in Hertfordshire. I'm originally from Hungary and I came here as a child when I was about 10, which was straight after the Hungarian Revolution in 1956. We actually got here in August 57. I spent a few months in Austria before we came here.
Okay,
so I've had all my schooling here, but I've never managed to lose my accent.
So can you remember much of Hungary before you came across?
Yes, very much indeed. I suppose it was such an upheaval that in the process, I don't feel that my parents ever managed to explain to me why we had to leave. And so it was a hugely traumatic experience. And to arrive here in an unknown place where I couldn't speak any English and everything seemed grey and dull and rainy. And I have to say I hated it, which is the reason why I think I never lost my accent, because initially I didn't like being here.
Okay, so what was that like then as a tech? Can you kind of recount some of your experiences? Maybe can you recount something, a memory that you have of Hungary before? Maybe
Packing
up your things or coming.
Yes.
Could you tell us a little bit about that, and then maybe tell us a little story about when you actually arrived here and what that was like?
Okay, well, for me, my childhood seemed to be idyllic in Hungary, but I know in retrospect that it wasn't, because it was during the Russian communist era behind the Iron Curtain. But because my parents were afraid that I might blurt out something at school, they never told me how they felt about the regime. So that's why I didn't understand why we had to leave. When we arrived in Vienna, my mother and my sister and I actually went and stayed in a refugee camp for quite a few months. My father got a job in Vienna and it took about 8 months to sort out where we were going to go from there. And eventually my parents got work permits to come to England and we arrived here as refugees. And they had some friends here who organized for me to attend a convent school. And my initial experiences there were not good either, because I had never seen nuns in my life, and so it was another shocking experience. And we had no money, so this was a private convent, and for the first few years, I was terribly aware that all my uniform was hand-me-downs, and children or girls at that age are not always nice. And my initial experiences in that convent were not nice. We lived in Muswell Hill in London, and because my parents both had to work, at the age of 11, I was traveling by myself from Muswell Hill into Bayswater on the bus. I think it's the sort of thing that we don't do to children anymore, but I mean, at that time that was quite normal. So it took about a year to learn English, and once I learned, I got to love the convent and I made some very good friends who are still friends of mine today, but it was initially very difficult.
So how does it feel then to be part of, what are your thoughts on being part of the One Another Project?
It's tremendously exciting. I applied and obviously like everyone else, I never thought I'd get a place. And when I did get the place, then there were two or three things in my mind about what I would like to do, but in the end I chose the one that has I felt very strongly about for a very, very long time, and that's to do with aging. And would you like me to say more about
it? Yes, please expand on what you're going to be doing and why you've chosen that course.
Fine. When I finished my, I did a postgraduate diploma in social administration at the London School of Economics, and that was back in 1969. And I went on to do a research project there as a research assistant, which was to evaluate the effectiveness of a voluntary agency, which was called Task Force. And Task Force put young school children in touch with older people in London, and with a view to alleviating their loneliness and helping them with shopping, with gardening, with decorating. And it was an 18-month project. And through that, I became very aware of the problems of aging and so on. And then later on, we moved to Staffordshire, and I got a job with a foundation called the Bess Johnson Foundation. This was in the 1970s, and I was their research officer. And that organization, again, and its objectives are to improve the quality of life of older people. And I also taught on an open university course called An Aging Population. And through all the reflection I did at the time, I sort of gradually came to realize that actually what would be needed here would be a sort of great power movement, you know, a self-help group of older people who would be campaigning for improving the situation of older people in our society. And then I went on to do other things. I taught sociology in an FE college for over 20 years. But then last autumn, I attended a lecture given by someone called Julia Neuberger, and she had just written a book called Not Dead Yet, A Manifesto for Old Age. And she just came out with all these thoughts about aging that, you know, felt really, it rang true with everything I had always thought of. And her message was, get angry, get on the barricades, set up a great power movement. There is one, there was one in America which was very powerful. And I thought, yes, you know, because until then I thought maybe this is just me who thinks that there is such a need. And so I suppose that's encouraged me to think much more about it. And that's why I've ended up choosing this theme for the 1 hour.
So we're going to be doing then for the duration of the hour. What are you taking anything up there and what are you planning to say?
Yes, well, it's going to be very boring. I think people are going to fall asleep if they are up at this unearthly hour or watch later. I've got a lecture on ageism, which is very much based on Julia Neuberger's book, and I have actually been in touch with her PA, and I have got permission to do this. Yes, so I'm going to be talking about the different things that need improving for when we get to old age. I've got my t-shirt, well, my sweatshirt saying Older and Bolder. I've got a banner that I think Age UK are bringing for me, which will say something like, too old to be employed, but young enough to stand on the plinth at 5 a.m. and I've got 10 sort of placards about with the points that Julia Neuberger puts forward in her manifesto that needs changing. So I'm going to hold each one up in turn and talk to each one in turn. And with any luck, I might have some music as well about aging, like the one by the Beatles, When I'm 64, and things like that.
Great. So what kind of impact effect would you like your hour to have?
Well, it would be lovely to think if there would, you know, if through it, there would be other people who feel like I do. I mean, I mean, obviously the dream would be that there would be somebody who would want, who would actually come and lead a great power movement. I don't think it's me. I would love Julia Neuberger to lead it, but I'm not sure if, although she talked about it, I don't think she would want to, and that's the problem. I think any movement like that would need somebody charismatic, somebody really well known who'd want to run with it. So, well, even if nothing dramatic happens, I hope perhaps it will raise awareness that older people need to do something themselves.
Great. So what would you say then, how would you describe yourself?
Terribly confused. I think through, is that how you mean, my personality? Is that how you mean?
Yeah.
Awfully confused. Yeah, I think partly to do with this traumatic childhood that was traumatic for me, because once we got to England, I thought I'd never ever see Hungary again, because obviously no one had any idea that the wall would come down and that we'd be able to go back. So for about 30, 40 years, I lived with this sense of loss, and it also gave me a huge amount of insecurity. And then even to do with religion, I think too, a lot of confusion, because I was brought up initially as nothing. Then I went to a convent, became an awfully committed Catholic. Then I married someone who is Jewish. I am Jewish by origin. And so there's such a fusion of different cultures, different religions. I still don't believe in any religion, really. I think I'm an agnostic. And then even in my personality, you know, I'm very shy and reticent on the one hand, but there must be an element of exhibitionism in me, because otherwise I wouldn't have volunteered to go up there on the plinth. So I think I'm oversensitive, and I'm sort of moderately intelligent, I think. I'm very much in awe of authority figures or people who I think are much brighter than me. Anything do you want me to elaborate further? Or
can you tell us a little about you mentioned your husband a couple of times. Can you talk about your family?
Yes, sure. He is wonderful. He's been incredibly supportive. He's very laid back. So it's just right for me, because I tend to be so neurotic. He balances me out. We're both in education. We both spent our lives in the public sector. We've got two fantastic daughters who are grown up. Both are married. One has a baby and the other one is expecting a baby. So really, I consider them my greatest achievement in life.
Perfect. And what kind of plans, hopes, fears do you have for the future?
Fine. Well, I'm now in my 60s and I have retired, but I am not happy staying at home. I didn't want to retire. So I've now chosen a career for myself in retirement. I'm training to be an advisor with the Citizens Advice Bureau in Hartsmere, near where I live. So that is what I'm planning to do for as long as I can, plus look after my grandchildren, I think.
Great. And going back to the plinth again, how are you feeling 20 minutes before you go up onto the plinth?
Well, I feel all right, but I'm just terribly scared that once I'm up there, I'll go totally, utterly blank. So hopefully I won't. It's terribly strange, because I would be absolutely petrified to hold forth to an audience of adults. I'm very used to talking to younger people through lecturing in this college, but I think I would be awfully in awe of doing that. But because it's to a camera, I'm hoping I'll forget that there is anybody watching what I'm doing. And also I'm terribly scared of being a huge embarrassment to my family and anyone else, my friends or colleagues who could be watching. I'm scared of being an embarrassment. They'll all cringe.
So have you got anything else you'd like to say about being part of the One Another project, to be one of 2,400 people that get to share in the experience?
I think it's an incredible project. You know, as a sociologist, I think it's wonderful to have this cross-section of the population. And I have watched a lot of other people out there, and it is just a wonderful, wonderful initiative. So very, very grateful to Anthony Gormley and for the One Another team to give me this opportunity.
Okay, and finally, who would you say you're doing this for?
Who am I doing it for? Well, presumably. Firstly, for myself, I can't say, and perhaps for all the people in general, hopefully. Is that what you meant? Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.